welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. You know, I'm really interested in how our show evolves today because I think today's topic may be one of the most challenging we have ever discussed, certainly that I've been involved in. And what we're going to talk about today is something that I was reminded money can't buy. It's translated into all languages, and yet it takes enormous desire, time, and discipline to cultivate. And that may be the most important measure, and that it may be the most important measure of who we are in a free society, and that is the subject of character. My fear is that accomplishments, acquisitions, and blatant consumerism have blinded us to that which really matters. It's not about what we have. It should be more about who we are than what we have. And yet, apart from some religious institutions, who is focusing on the subject of character? I am sure it must be on the curriculum of some universities, but still few high schools teach on the subject of character. It's not part of our electoral process any longer. And it feels vacant in our consumerism, which is far more interested in price, product, than internal integrity. So, what about the character of our leaders in industry and in politics? Are we, as consumers, more interested in what they provide for us than we are in the depth of their character? You know, I wonder, and so today I want to chat about it with my dear compatriot, Terry Hershey. I hope that this will be a lively conversation mixed with mixed positions. Outcomes are indeed vital in this equation, although outcomes determine the direction of our culture and our economics, but outcomes do not represent the ethics and human values of the developers of these countries. Now, as you might expect today, since I'm talking about character, that I plan to appeal to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And from his historic I Have a Dream speech. And I want to discuss less what we do than who we are. And I feel at the end of the day, as they say at the end of the day, you are your values. Ultimately, your values represent the barometer by which you coordinate your activities, your actions, your beliefs about other people. Now, I have an extended quote, which quote from Psychology Today and psychologist Dr. Greg Enriquez, and I'll try to make it brief, but it's a really good little section. It's kind of an extended quote, and he writes, "Let's take a minute and reflect on what Martin Luther King meant when he talked about the content of character. This refers to the core ethical values of honesty and integrity, respecting others, taking responsibility for one's actions, being fair and just, and being someone who promotes love and compassion in others. We can also think about the character of our character in terms of virtues, which I will kind of pass on by. But this is quite a daunting list, and Enriquez goes on to query, now ask yourself, do I care about these values? Do I try to live up to these values? If the answer is yes, then why do you care about them? And Enriquez writes, along with Dr. King, I would argue that there is nothing more important than the content of our character. And that's the end of the quote. So the question hangs, do you agree that nothing is more important than the content of our character? Today I bring back our friend Terry Hershey, author of 17 books, acclaimed public speaker and teacher, and minister of grace and human dignity. Terry, my friend, welcome to the next chapter with Charlie.
Charles, it's good to be with you.
Yeah.
Except now you have to, my bio has to read, not acclaimed speaker, but acclaimed Zoom Zoom gatherer.
Yeah, let the listeners know how many speaking engagements you have throughout the end of the year.
You mean in person? The answer is zero.
Yeah. In person, yeah. Zero. And that was the way, that was your livelihood.
That is correct. That is true.
Yeah, a couple bucks here and there on a garden, but for the most part, it was selling books and speaking engagements, of which you had several because you're so good at what you do. So this,
you know what, though, Charlie? That's an interesting thing, because just that, I mean, just to throw this in the mix, because I was going to ask you a couple questions about your list about character, but when life gets upside down like that, for example, okay, well, that's not fun. I got to find a way to make a living, and that's not easy. Well, character's easy to go by the wayside when life gets upside down.
Why do you think, Terry? Because we're so interested in outcomes and acquisitions and paying the bills and staying alive.
Your three lists, your list, I was writing down, because we hadn't talked about this before, accomplishments, acquisitions, and consumerism. In other words, it has to do with where I park my identity. In other words, where I park my value as a human.
Boy, that's brilliant, Terry. I love that. Where do you park your identity as a human? And let's start with that. Where does Terry Hershey park his identity as a human?
Well, let's start from the beginning of how all of this sort of, because it's a narrative, and this is the thing that I like about our conversations is, very often, whatever the topic is, we're not certain the narrative because we haven't unpacked it in our own sort of thinking, right?
Right. That's the whole process of the conversation.
Exactly. So I can say to myself, of course character is important to me, and of course moral character is important to me for God's sake, and I say that intentionally, for God's sake, I was raised in a very Christian home. So moral character is very important to me. And then I have to think through what did it mean to be a moral person way back when? And it's interesting to see how that my kind, the religion I was raised in, was married to this sort of what we would call the Western narrative you just did, which has to do with acquisition. In other words, the morality that I was trained to be the good kid, was not just, it wasn't just for the sake of being a good kid. There was a payoff there. I got to make God happy, I got to impress people, and I got awards for it.
And you got speaking engagements.
And I got speaking engagements, and I got paid.
But
and there was,
did you feel you had to compromise your character in doing that?
It's not about compromising your character, is that my character had to do with who did I impress and how did I go about impressing them.
Holy cow. And that's completely inverse of the way we're trying to define character today.
Yeah, because for us, see, a character in our Western mindset is something outside of us that we think we need to add, and therefore it still has that sort of it's just the list you gave.
Yes,
it was a good list.
Yes.
It's an acquisition. I need to acquire character.
That's terrible. Yeah, that, you know, I've never thought of it that way, Terry. That's why I'm pausing, because I think that rather than what you were born with, what you were taught with, what you believe in, what is honored and valued in society, is not that kind of character of honesty and integrity. Although, you know, we still lean toward people like that. It's just they are typically not powerful people. Rare is a person of honesty, integrity, and respect and justice and fairness. Rarely are they people that get high acclaim. The people that get high acclaim are the ones that make the money, and it's a power game. We had talked about this before, but power is so critically important, and power and character don't often, nowadays in America today, don't often run hand in hand.
No. It's a, it was a very, one of the first, one of the realities is of the upbringing that I had was that it married itself to those accomplishment, acquisition, consumerism kind of thing, even though we attach God's name to it. And, well, let me tell you, Charlie Brown goes to Snoopy, who's sitting on it. You know how he sat on his doghouse with a typewriter? Remember that?
Vaguely. I wasn't a big Charlie Brown fan.
But Snoopy was always typing. Sometimes he'd type. He was writing books.
Okay.
And so Charlie Brown says to Snoopy, what do you... Snoopy says, I'm writing a book about theology. And Charlie Brown says, oh, that's great. What's the title? And Snoopy types, has it ever occurred to you you might be wrong? I think the starting point for me, because I'm thinking, you asked me, should we talk about character? And the starting point for me is really what's hard about this, is the starting point has to be unbelievable humility. That I have to let go of all the stuff I assumed I needed to be somebody, even to, quote, be a moral person.
Yeah, I have a comment that humility in my recent pursuits is probably a key attribute for me to get anywhere that I want to go, and it's sort of a diminishment of self and a diminishment of, you know, trying to build up myself and satisfy myself and to get myself out of the equation and get others and for me to get God into the equation. And it calls for a radical humility and a radical understanding of what I don't like about myself, which is not a pleasant journey, but it takes that journey for me to understand what I would like to endure, what I would like enduring in my character.
Yes. Because here's my question to you, that the whole thing about, because some people think if you go that humility thing, that you're somehow giving up your source of strength, and there's that power concept again. But you don't believe that, do you?
It depends on where you consider my source of strength. If my source of strength is myself, then I am ready to give that up. But this is a very spiritual thing for me, and I'm ready to put it into the hands of God. But it doesn't take away my responsibility.
But we don't even go there, because you have to name where the responsibility, the capacity comes from. That's the thing we talked about. You know Reinhold Niebuhr, right?
Yes.
Okay, Reinhold, it's a quote that I've always toyed with using, and maybe now I'll use it in one of my writings someday, but Reinhold Niebuhr says, a man, let's just say man or woman,
of course,
is an individual, but he is not self-sufficing, self-sufficient. The law of his nature is love, which means a harmonious relation of life to life in obedience to the divine center and the source of his life. This law is violated when this man seeks to make himself the center and source of his own life.
So the American dream falls completely counter to that.
Completely antithetical. Completely,
yes.
Antithetical.
Completely.
And here's what's interesting, Charlie, because we're going back to my childhood now, and we put different languages on it now, and we say, okay, we're gonna be moral, we're gonna be okay, good. And there's nothing wrong with saying, oh, we're gonna be character. But what do? We write a book on the 7 habits of good character people, and I'm not making fun of that. I'm just saying that's the way we picture it.
Yes, in sort of formulaic.
Formulaic and acquisitional. In other words, I'll yes. learn it. It's like a test or a contest or something I can get good at.
And yet, in order for it to be genuine, in order for it, and believe me, people will sense genuine and they'll sense bullshit. In order for it to be genuine, it can't be formulaic or acquisitional. It has to be part of a core essence, a core who you are at the deepest part of yourself.
Correct.
So you've brought up a couple of times, I want to understand your distinction. You've talked about character and morality. Do you see those as the same thing, or do you see a distinction between those?
Well, the problem with the word morality is that it's attached to lists, and so then it becomes like commandments, the Ten Commandments, and then it's a pecking order, you know, of just checking off the list. The Pharisees had that list, the morality list. Remember, they quizzed Jesus about it. And he said, I'm glad you got that list, but there's really only one.
Love.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? In your tradition, you know, your conservative Christian tradition, the top of the list of morality was sexuality.
Well, yeah, the top of the list was just what we used to call, behind closed doors, what we used to call shit you didn't do.
I was thinking about that, and I hope I'm not changing our subject here, but I was thinking about that as a question, and that what about when character or morality, whichever term we choose to use, is defined more by what we don't do than it is defined by what we do.
100%.
And if it's defined by what we don't do, then it just becomes like the Ten Commandments. It doesn't become like the Beatitudes, which to me are things that you do. They are not things you don't do.
And we can take this to heart, because if it's something I don't do, then therefore I'm holding up a medal for what I've achieved. As soon as I've held up a medal for my achievement, then I've automatically diminished what it means to be a person of character.
You know, it's interesting. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just it's not meant to shame me. It's meant to free me from the fact that I don't need that medal. In other words, if I have the opportunity to be kind to you, or to gather my pride and not have that with you, or to give you a generous gift, or to hug you, or to see you, or listen to you, or any of the things that would make our encounter human, if I have the capacity to do that, it's not about what I'm going to achieve with it.
And too often, these character-driven qualities or character-driven attributes are aligned or associated with what I'm going to get out of it. How is it going to serve me?
Right.
Yeah, I had a friend just last week, Terry, was invited. A friend wanted to invite him to be a man of character at some sort of event. And he just said, no way. He said, do not put my name up for vote, because if people knew who I really was, I would fail at it radically.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me speaks of a person of character.
Yes. Actually, that's a perfect illustration. You read all the saints, and Saint Augustine was that way. I mean, he wanted to be a person of character, but he didn't want to give up the other stuff in his life that he loved to do.
he liked to do a lot of stuff.
But the point is, that when he became a man of character when he was honest about that war.
Do you think a person of character can admit that they are a person of character but with flaws? Or do you think the whole humility aspect goes off the charts if you say, I think I have some character in me?
I mean, you mentioned Martin Luther King Jr. and I mean, the person I look up to for that is Mr. Rogers.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, even when he won awards, it wasn't about him.
So yeah, that film was. See, I wasn't a big Mr. Rogers fan, so I didn't follow him a lot. But the Tom Hanks film helped me a lot in understanding much more about, you know, depending on how accurate the film was. But the film certainly made me feel much more about who he was and how he cared truly for the world and cared for others.
Let me pause, because this is important. The film was based upon Tom Junid. Tom Junid is a writer.
Yeah, it was a writer that he worked with. Yeah.
Yeah, Tom Junid was under contract. He did a lot of work for Esquire magazine, and Esquire did put Mr. Rogers on the cover. And this is interesting. This is an interesting story. And the name of the interview that Junid did with Fred Rogers was "Can You Say Hero" or something to that effect. And it was going to be Mr. Rogers' picture on the cover of Esquire, and this is a long time ago, back in the 90s. And Esquire magazine, you know, is very American macho. I mean, American successful.
Sure, sure.
Image of. And there was a conversation among the people at Esquire having an article where Mr. Rogers is the cover. And I was like, oh my God, that's going to hurt us badly. And do you know what the best selling Esquire magazine has been today?
Was that
Mr. Rogers?
Was it?
But
really?
Here's what's interesting. So Tom Junid goes through this thing thinking, oh my God, I'm going to interview Mr. Rogers. I mean, I'm really good at what I do. I'm really good at what I do, and I have to do this. And Mr. Rogers saw him, and Tom Junid tells this story personally, because the person playing him in the movie, they give him a different name, but the person playing him in the movie, and I'm about to break down here, Charlie, because Mr. Rogers sees him, and he sees him. He sees the boy in the Tom Junid character. And Tom Junid said, watching that clip, the very first time I saw the movie, he said, yes, that's Mr. Rogers. He loves broken people. The point is that Fred Rogers is, because he didn't have to be somebody, he could honor the fact that we're in this together. That's the extraordinary thing. That's the irony of it, Charlie, because once I give up my accomplishments, acquisitions, and consumerism, I think, who am I? What do I have to rely on? Well, now, because of that, I can see that we're in this together. That's the Jesus thing. Love has to be it.
So let's amplify this just a bit. So, you know, you're implying that character is not a list of traits. It's not a to-do list. Nevertheless, there are character traits to which we must aspire. Don't you think that there are things that parts of our life that we're not we see holes in our life and say, I want to improve on this. I want to get better on that. That is a part of character development, don't you think?
Yeah. So tell me what you, because you made a list, and I forget who you're reading, Enrique, somebody. Tell me what that list was. Honesty, integrity. What was
I'm going to put it. I made it simplify. I simplified it, and I put
what did you say
trust,
the list was?
Trust, respect, responsibility, fairness, and the promotion of love, kindness, and compassion.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and I, you know, I'm not going to argue with that list. I mean, and I don't disagree with you. The fact that I seek to have these things when someone has an interaction with me, I hope that that's that they would say those things would be true. I don't disagree with that. But
it's a hell of a thing if you put it up and you put it on your objective list, and then you're checking it off. Okay, yes, I'm trustworthy today. I'm respectful today. I mean that sort of it sort of loses its meaning
purpose,
when
yeah.
you do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Charlie, I am not only trustworthy. I am the most trustworthy of any of your friends. And not only the most trustworthy, you've never seen anybody more trustworthy than me. So that's what we end up doing.
Yeah, the problem is, Terry, I trust you, but the things that I trust may not be the things that I admire.
That's exactly right. But that's the whole point, is as soon as I make it something that goes on that other list, then it's for the wrong reason.
Okay, that's a perfect way to... take a break and start back and say, how do we engender within ourselves, how do we engender the capacity to be people of character rather than people, consumeristic, acquisitional, power-hungry people? What sort of personal changes must we make in order to be that person we want to be? Let's come back and talk about that. Hi there, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and I'm with my dear friend Terry Hershey, and we are talking about what I thought would be a pretty straightforward topic that's turned out to be much more complicated than I thought it would be, and we're talking about the content of our character and how, what kind of society do we live in that character is not... At least, I think it's kind of secretly admired, but not overtly admired. I mean, I think people recognize a trustworthy and respectful person, and they love them and honor them, but it doesn't draw a lot of press. And so what Terry and I were talking about before we went on break is, how does one go about, as Ben Franklin would have written, because he wrote a lot on character, about what are some good attributes of character without making it a simple checklist and, you know, how well am I doing today at that? What kinds of processes might we use to become a person of character? Or maybe not for, you know, it's for us to become a person of character, but also I think what it takes, Terry, you know, because I'm going to answer the question, it becomes admiring a person of character and finding a role model that I want to be like that person. I see someone said, I want to be like that person. I'm not after that person's power. I'm after that person's heart.
Yeah, that's good. Because I was thinking about the question you asked before the break, which is what would be, because I'm thinking of the questions that I would ask people. And here are the two questions for me, Charlie. One is, because the people I know of character, Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King Jr., Mr. Rogers, my grandmother. The people of character at some point in their life had to take themselves out of the center of their life, and they had to understand the concept of mercy.
And the concept of mercy, but that also implies an understanding that you need mercy.
In the sense that mercy, if I need mercy, then we're going back to the very beginning of your comments, which is, therefore, I am not the center of the world. Therefore, I'm not the center of even this conversation. Therefore, I'm not the center. In other words, anybody who has to make themselves the center has not received mercy.
That's a great comment. That's a great. Could you perhaps give an example of that? Could you elaborate on that a bit? Because I love that concept. Does it come to you?
The Niebuhr quote I was giving is that at some point I have to wrestle with the fact that everything I thought I needed to be, quote, somebody, was either A, not sufficient, or B, didn't matter. And because the second thing, I need to add something to this. The second thing after mercy is grace, which I can talk about. But mercy is the fact that there is a lifeline to me that this Terry, without any of that other stuff, is enough. And therefore, there's no need for puffery. There's no need for pontificating. There's no need to be pompous. There's no need to have character as an accomplishment, acquisition, or as a consumer.
And as a matter of fact, it really goes against the whole purpose of the exercise.
100%.
So do you think Jesus' words of consider the needs of one another as greater than your own is a pathway to character?
Yeah, I mean, because he turned everything on his head. He turned the Old Testament system, which was, you know, thank God, at least we have our list. We know what the list is, you know, and I get that. But he's saying there's something underneath that, is basically what he's saying. And, you know, a lot of his comments, the least of these, you know, or praying for people that are our enemies. All the stuff that we can only do if I don't need to do it to be impressive.
So it seems in our discussion that it's coming down to what is important. Is it power and stuff, or is it a genuine humility of self and caring for other people? I mean, you know, that would be character right there. Humility of self and caring for other people. And consistency, and then we can just keep going on and on.
And you can see, I mean, I take Jesus, for example, and in any of his conversations in the New Testament, as soon as someone entered his sphere, the emphasis, the focus was on them, the other person. That was extraordinary. In other words, he didn't need to be somebody or do something, and that's why I'm impressed with Mr. Rogers. That's what happens with Mr. Rogers. He didn't need to be important. He didn't need to be the center. You can't do, Charlie, you can't do things like love one another or the least of these or pray for your enemy if you have to be the center. You can't.
Yeah, that's, you know what it reminds me of? And, you know, my listeners, fortunately I haven't spoken of it for a long time, but, you know, in Richard Rohr's First and Second Half of Life, it really talks about second half living, of not fulfilling the ego and not having all these ego demands and letting go of the ego and letting go, and then more of a giving and a complimenting sort of heart, sort of way of life.
Well, let me ask you a question, because that's good. That is the reframing of that is, in other words, because I'm asking you so about character, if you're thinking of character as these things to add. I need to be trusting and honest and integrity and fairness. Those are great things. I don't disagree with that at all. I want those things. But if you start with letting go of my ego, don't you sort of now make space for those things?
Yes, yes. You make space for them, and they not only just make space for them, you actually birth them. That's a good verb. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, no, because you can't. Birth is good because that means it's internal. It's already there.
So tell me about. Not about Martin Luther King and Gandhi and the rest of them all. Do you know people of character today that are just that no one else besides you and the handful of friends they have would know about those people, but you consider them strong people of character? And if so, what is the what makes you think that? You know, what do they do? What are they like that makes you say, "Boy, I could trust that person with very important things," and I think they're coming from a good heart. Can you talk about an ordinary everyday person like that?
That's interesting, but I'll start with a caveat, and that is the people I think of that come to mind for that are also people who are have been messed up internally. In other words, they're quite less than perfect. So it has nothing to do with that. But these are people for whom mercy and grace are real. And I can tell you two things about these people in my life. One is, when I'm with them, they make space for me, as in, I am real. Two is, when you see the people in their life, me and or others, the people in their life, once they walk out of that encounter, they're better off for having had that encounter.
Yeah, and
that's how you can tell a person of character is, do they leave people better off or not?
Yeah, and better off internally, not necessarily empowering
right,
them
right,
to make
right,
money
right. Exactly,
financially.
Exactly.
Better
exactly.
Are you a better person? Do you feel better about yourself?
Exactly. Internally, in other words, are they a dispenser of mercy and grace themselves? Yeah.
Boy, you know, Terry, you've really turned. You've done a Jesus trick on us, and you've turned this whole character discussion into something very different. And I really love the idea of not making a checklist of where is my checklist of trust, respect, responsibility, fairness, and the promotion of love, kindness, and compassion. I mean, how is that not crucial? But if you make that a checklist, then it's
but
more
Charlie,
of a superficial
I mean,
action than something that's coming from the heart that requires brokenness, having failed
absolutely.
At that, having failed at every single one of those.
And absolutely. And so, because you know as well as I do, and, you know, it's hard not to go into, because everything becomes, quote, political. But you know as well as I do, we have fights, public fights about who's the, quote, most honest. For God's sake. That's how you know it's not a character thing, if you have to fight about who's the most.
Yeah. Yeah, that's extremely true. You know, I wrote a blog some weeks ago that says the disappearance of role models. And when it comes to character, we have really no face that I can think of. I'm sure you, but we have no current face of ethics and character. We have face of power. We have face of position. We have faith of, you know, face in belief, what I believe.
but not who I am. Am I a broken person that can be trusted, that's worked through that, and am trying my best to be a better person as a result? We have no role model for that. I mean, if we do, they're not well known. I'm sure we have role models for it, but they're not making the press.
Yeah, it's very difficult in a world, because what you're talking about is public figures. It's very difficult in a world I don't know, maybe it's about the way our world, who we adulate, you know, and who we put at the top in terms of coverage. But I don't disagree with you. But you know what? I mean, it's my recommendation, because you asked me the question, are there people like that in my life? That's the question you need to, I mean, every person listening to your podcast, it's a beneficial question to ask. Who are these people for me? And how do these people help me be people who are, because the thing about mercy and grace is that way, when I walk into an encounter with someone, I'm not afraid to say, you know what, I don't know. I'm not afraid to say, you know what, I could be wrong. You know what, I'm not afraid to say, I want to learn. I'm not afraid to say that.
Yeah, I concur. You know, I've told the story. I won't bore you with the story, but I've told it over and over again about my first meeting with the bishop when I came in as a conservative and he was a liberal. And he says the one thing that we have to be able to, and this was in Christianity, and he said the one thing we have to be able to admit is that the Bible could, let's assume the Bible is not wrong, but we as broken human beings, we have to be open to the fact that we can be wrong in our interpretation. And
yeah.
And that has stuck with me ever since, that I can be wrong. There was another question I had for you too before we close up, and since I didn't write it down, I'm not remembering it. But it was a good question, so we can just pretend that there was a good question in there somewhere.
What you need to do is put in the show notes, at the end of the show, Charlie asked one of the best questions that have ever been asked.
No. Charlie thought of one of the best questions. Charlie thought of one of the best questions that's never been asked. But I love your take, Hirsch. I mean, I love your take, and you know, I so resonate, because I was hung up on this about trying to be all of this character list, and it's not a character list, it's a persona, and it is a humility of persona. And you know, you named that off early on in the show, and I think that is it. Now, you know, I want to give an example that you gave of a friend who differs from you sort of ideologically.
Correct.
But his character quotient is quite high, and you said you would vote for him to be, this is not politics, this is in smaller organizations, you would be an advocate of him being a leader of this organization, even though you disagreed with him, and you could continue to disagree with him, but you knew he was a man of great heart and great character and was going to do something that he felt was right and genuine and good for people.
Yeah, and we were talking about whether I'd vote for him to be a pastor of a church, for example, because
right.
The person we're talking about... I disagree with him on what we would call policy issues on just about everything. But I know that in leadership, he's gonna be the first to say, I could be wrong about this, and the second to say, I need other people to be involved in this. In other words, I'm not the center of the universe.
And that is, you know, Paul's wanting to close, and I'm wanting to go on and on and on, but I do have this question because it is so true, in that you know, we even as a population, forget our leaders, but even as a population, and, you know, we're not going to get into our leaders' polities and all of that, but the followers, you know, the constituents of each of our leaders each have a very personal agenda that they want accomplished that has nothing to do with character. That had, or has not necessarily all of them nothing to do with character, but it's that they want certain policies and they want power and they want accomplishment, and would it help us to think differently, or is that just a whole different subject?
Well, I think the answer is 100% yes, and I have to go through that too personally, because there are certain choices I would want us to make policy-wise. And by the way, policy always has to be a compromise. There's not like a stark 100% policy.
Right.
So I start with the compromise part.
And policy always has a moral aspect to it.
But it always has a moral aspect to it, yeah. And I don't remember where I was going when I started that sentence, but it was going to be really good. It was like the question you were going to ask.
And then I interrupted you.
Yeah, it was going to be really, really good, though.
Yeah, okay, so let's end with that, with a question, the best question I never asked and the best response you never gave.
Yeah. And it, which is goes back to Snoopy, has it ever occurred to you might be wrong? But the point is, at the bottom line is, can we actually sit as people together, as humans?
You know, that is so brilliant. And I will close with this story. I had a friend who's my personal coach, and she's been on the podcast several times, and she had a gathering the other night, and it was a gathering of a very diverse gathering, and we were just, and it was a Zoom gathering. It wasn't in a room. It was a Zoom gathering. And it was just to talk about current issues and to try to talk as respectfully yet as truthfully to you as you possibly could. And Terry, that was so healthy. I think everybody walked away with understanding everybody else better, you know, much more camaraderie. And I think it was a very character-filled, nobody was looking for accomplishments and no one was looking for their way to come about, but people simply looking to understand, and how valuable that would be. And that's a character issue of trying to understand and trying to be considerate of other people.
That's a great story, Charlie. And I mean, what struck me about it when you told me was that anytime character is present in our world, it is a gift to us.
It's a great close, Terry. Let's. Anytime character is exposed to us in the world, it is a gift to us individually, and it is a gift to the world. Terry Hershey, I love having you as a friend, and I love having you on our podcast. Thank you so much for spending time with me, and for entering your dinner cooking time.
Likewise, my friend.
Okay,
Likewise.
Buddy. Take care.